Well, good morning. It's good to be here. Last time I was supposed to preach, I got real sick, so I'm glad that didn't happen this morning. Jay called me at 8 o'clock last night just to make sure I was feeling okay, and I appreciate that. But Pastor Aleem is sick this week, so I don't know what it is. Apparently when Jay doesn't teach, somebody gets sick, so apparently you have to teach for the rest of the time. So as we continue our conversation about relationships and biblical relationships, what does that look like? And we come to marriage. I'm just going to say this up front. I'm not a marriage expert. I'm 29. I've been married for 3.5 years. I'm still winging it most of the time and striking out a lot. So we're going to learn together. But I have to say this, I absolutely love marriage. I did not use my singleness well the time that I had. And I'll just say this up front, I don't think singleness or marriage elevates one thing or the other. God has given you those gifts and that time to be used to glorify him whatever way is seen fit at the time. And so both of them are good and glorifying things. Friendships are good and glorifying things. And so before we go on, I just want to make sure that we have an understanding and agreement here that we're not trying to elevate one thing over the other, but trying to put everything in the perspective of what is true. And that is, if our focus is on a great friendship or a great marriage or a great time of being singleness, we've missed the point. But if our focus is on having a great relationship with Jesus Christ and doing the things that he's called us to do, we will live successfully. That doesn't mean we'll be rich or mean that we'll have no problems or issues, but to live faithfully to God is to be successful, not to be rich. And honestly, coming to marriage, especially I would say in my generation, we kind of idolize this marriage in such a weird kind of way, and I always think like, the older generation always kind of made fun of it to me. The younger generation was like, it's going to be awesome. And no one really talked about how this thing actually works. And I just remember I was really excited when Christine and I were dating. One day we were bored, and we started talking about, hey, should we get married? Should we not get married? Is this kind of where we're going? Is not? And I was like, you know what? We got nothing to do, and I don't have any dates planned, and we were super broke. And so I was like, what's something that's fun but cheap? And by cheap, absolutely free. There's a place called Robbins Brothers. And so I was like, let's go look at rings. Because one, I'm a guy and I'm an idiot. And so I don't look at rings and I don't know why they're cool. I just, I'm wearing a rubber ring right now because it was a dollar. And I went, dollar good. And so we went and looked at these rings thinking like, Christina's not even that, if you ever met my wife, if you haven't, you should. Because she's awesome. But if you've ever met Christina, you notice that she doesn't wear much jewelry. So I thought, easy peasy, this is going to be easy. She's going to be like, generic, that one, right there. I like it, and we move on with life. So I thought, maybe this will take up 30 minutes of our time. Well, we ended up being there for like 3 or 4 hours. And the entire time, she found a ring, and she didn't take it off. And every time the person was like, why don't you try this one on? She'd put it on her other hand so she didn't have to take the other ring off. And so we kind of sat there, and I was like, oh, my gosh, this is a bad idea. What did I do? And so this was probably on a Friday, if I remember correctly. And so we finally left, and at this time, we really weren't sure if we were going to get married or not. We were just having the conversation. And so I took the weekend, and I was just really praying through some stuff. And I just felt like the Lord was saying, this is it. This is the time. Go buy it. So on July 12th, I went to Robbins Brothers, and the guy was like, hey, I'll even give you a discount. And I was like, praise God, this is it right here. I felt very affirmed. The 13th, we had a very long conversation that was not affirming. It was more of like, I don't know if we should get married. And I just went, if that's true, I would like to know in the next 60 days, because I would like to just got this return policy. I didn't say that, obviously. But I just remember, like, I feel affirmed, and then 12 hours later, I do not feel affirmed. What did I do here? And no one prepares you for that. And then as we got ready to the wedding day, everyone just says, say yes, dear, which, let me just tell you, that is terrible advice, guys. Saying yes, dear is not always the right answer, because sometimes she is wrong, because you know what? She's human, just like you, and you are sometimes wrong. So you never just say yes, dear, either way. So we're going to work on that a little bit later today. So when we get ready for our marriage, no one tells you like all the stuff that comes with a wedding and trying to get a house and what that all looks like and you changing insurance and cars and all this other stuff. And I just remember being super overwhelmed going, is this it? And then I remember the wedding day. And honestly, this is terrible. Christine gets so mad. I didn't cry when she first came into the room, but I cried at the sermon because I thought the sermon was just so moving to realize what was about to happen. And I remember the first time I saw Christina, I didn't say anything. I was just so overwhelmed. I was just like, I didn't know what to say. But when I got to sit there and be reminded that this is a picture. I was not prepared for that. That just hit me. the picture of what Jesus and the church looks like. And I see those open doors with that white dress and go, oh my gosh. Hush. I just remember being so overwhelmed in that moment going, the purpose is not for me not to have sex before this moment and for her to walk down in a white dress and say, look, we did it. High five. Now we can go have sex shame free. But the purpose is to live a life glorifying God in every second. And this is just a picture. So we're going to dive into why this is important. Okay? So Genesis chapter 2. We're just going to start from the beginning. Genesis chapter 2. Because this will explain why marriage is important to God. Because the reality also in this is a majority of us will get married. Singleness, a lifelong singleness is such a rare occurrence. So you will either get married or will spend a lifetime trying to find the person to marry, or some people choose to live with each other, which biblically that is wrong. And I would encourage you not to do that. But it is very, very important to God. So if we go through creation, Genesis 1 and the beginning of chapter 2 is the creation story. And as he creates everything, he goes, man, this is good. Man, this is good. Man, this is good. Man, this is good. And then he creates man and he goes, I'm going to create this being in my image. And he sees and goes, this is very good. And then chapter 2, verses 18 through 25, it says this. It says, then the Lord said, it is not good that man should be alone. I will make him a helper fit for him. Now out of the ground the Lord had formed every beast of the field and every bird of the heavens and brought them to the man to see what he would call them. And whatever the man called every living creature, that was his name. The man gave names to all the livestock and to all the birds of the heavens and every beast of the field. But for Adam, there was not found a helper for him. So God caused a deep sleep to fall upon the man. And while he slept, he took one of his ribs and closed up its place with flesh. And the rib that the Lord God had taken from the man, he made into a woman and brought her to the man. The man said, this at last is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. And the man and his wife were both naked, and they were not ashamed. All right, every time I read this, I get really jealous of Adam because we had a date. We had to figure this out. Literally, Adam was like, I don't like being alone. And God was like, all right, go to sleep. And he wakes up, he's like, oh, cool. I have a wife. Sweet. That's not fair. I get mad about that. I love that the first thing that he says, man, this is not good. It's for that he would be alone. Because one attribute of God is not loneliness. In us being made in his image, we were not created to be lonely. And I know a lot of people get offended by this word, he made him a helper. And people get offended by that word helper. The cool thing about that word helper is that is how God describes himself 16 times out of the 19 times that word is used in Genesis. So don't think of being called a helper, ladies, as a bad thing. Because God repeatedly uses this same word to say, she is made in my image and is showing my attributes. As Adam is put to work, as we see that before, this is pre-fall. Adam is put to work before the fall. He goes, you being alone is bad, so I'm making you this helper to tag team, to work together. The picture that's trying to fill is you are the opposite. The helper is the opposite, is meeting the needs that this person is not good at, so you have the helper to meet those needs. It is a fulfillment of things. I never noticed this more. The other day I asked Aaron, I said, hey, am I encouraging? And Christina was like, or Aaron said, when small things go bad, you're really good about helping people out, but big stuff, you're not. And part of it is just because a lot of my life has a lot of big events, and so I just become very factual when big events happen, and that's a bad thing. I recognize that. I'm working on it. But Christina is the complete opposite. When something small happens, Christina says, suck it up, buttercup, go on. But when something big happens, she like goes full mom mode, is like sits down, let's make some tea, we'll talk it out, we'll work this thing through. And so we balance each other out in that way. It fits well. She is my helper who complements me, not goes against me. And that took some time to figure out. We butt heads quite a bit. We're not perfect in any way, shape, or form. But we butt heads, and we still work through it because we are a team. And just as in normal life, it's not to be opposed to one another, but to come together, to walk in unity. Again, that doesn't mean perfect unity, because we're not perfect. We're sinful human beings. I love that everybody's like, let's be in unity. The reality is sometimes unity is we're going to make it work. We're not going to agree. We're going to make it work. And even in marriage, I have found that sometimes it's true. We're not going to agree on this, but we're going to make it work. Let's meet in the middle and move forward. But the importance of marriage is that this man and this woman come together and leave the father and mother. And again, leaving is not saying, all right, like my dad is here today. And that wasn't like, hey, dad, cool, see you later. I'll show up around Christmas for gifts, I guess. If I did that, he'd pop me. I know he would. But it was, when we have trouble, I might call my dad for advice. And there's been a couple times I go, hey, I really don't know what I'm doing. But he will go, here's what I did. Now go figure it out. When Christina calls her mom, and I respect her parents all the more for this, I will never forget one time she asked her dad for advice, and he just went, go ask your husband. Y'all are married. I'm not over you. Y'all are in a relationship together. So we leave our father and mother not to forsake them, but to grow and take the things that they have taught us and to live a successful life. Secondly, character matters. Character matters in every aspect of every single relationship, but character matters even more with marriage because it is a lifelong covenant, and we'll get to more on that here in a minute. But if you would turn to 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 1 through 7, just a heads up, because some of you might get mad at me in a second, we're going to use this word, and we're going to use this word, the Bible uses it, so don't get mad at me, take it up with God, but he uses this word submit. We're explaining that, so before you yell at me and tune me out, just hold on, it's a good thing. We're going to work through this together. But 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 1 through 7, says this. It says, likewise, wives, be subject to your own husbands, or submit to your own husbands, so that even if some of them do not obey the word, they may be won without a word by the conduct of their wives. When they see your respectful and pure conduct, do not let your adorning be external, the braiding of your hair and putting on the gold jewelry or the clothing that you wear, but let your adorning be the hidden person of the heart with imperishable beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which in God's sight is very precious. For this is how the holy women who hoped in God used to adorn themselves, by submitting to their own husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, and you are her children. If you do good and do not fear anything that is frightening. And verse 7 says, likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to them, the woman who is as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. And I know that first part is, and again, we're going to jump to Ephesians 5 in a minute, just a heads up. And so I know that people don't like this word, submit. And we're explaining that a little bit more, but I first want you to understand the characteristics have nothing to do with physical beauty, either for the man or the woman. Now, if we go to the Song of Solomon, There are characteristics of physical beauty and clothing. And these things are not bad, but when they become the obsessive, the reason why we choose and chase after someone, we've missed the point. Because guess what? Your body changes as you get older. I did not say that. Clarify. But your body changes as you get older. When I met Christina, and this has nothing to do with Christina, I worked out 3 times a day. I was in great shape. But when we started going to a relationship and I started working more and started going, hey, I actually have to, you know, worry about somebody else, my workout time became a lot less important. And so my body obviously has changed. I'm not the chiseled Arnold Schwarzenegger I once used to be. No, I'm just kidding. But my body has changed. I look different than I did 7 years ago when we met. And so do most of you. If we only spend time on this, like my clothes are not the best clothes. Why? Because I like that and it's on sale. I could do that. But if I go drop $300 a month on shoes, well, how am I supposed to eat when I only make $300? If I live above my means and go, this is what defines me by what I wear, I'm missing the point. Because again, when I get home and my wife goes, I want you to listen to me, and I go, but don't I look good? That's going to be a really long evening. Well, actually, probably really short because she'll go, bye, and walk away. And if all I say is, hey, hun, I just need some time where you, because this is one of the ways that I rest, is just, I don't want to talk, I just want you to sit next to me. I just need to know that you're here and that you love me. That's all I care about. But she goes, but look how pretty that I am. I go, man, that's great, but I need you right here. Because my wife is beautiful because of who she is and not what she wears. It is hard. I used to laugh because people always go, when you wake up in the morning and you get that morning breath in your face, you'll look at her and go, she is not beautiful. But behind that, every guy goes, nah, she's still really beautiful. And I was like, I feel like that's probably not true. Like, you'll wake up and get that in your face and be like, all right, I'll talk to you in a minute. But there's many times where I wake up and I just go, I'm married to you. You have chosen to walk in this covenant with me. And it doesn't matter that you don't have makeup on right now and you're wearing an oversized t-shirt and you're doing this number a lot, but you're still beautiful because of who you are. Because her life reflects the gospel more than it reflects America. Because when I know when I sit down and say, hey, I'm hurting, I need you to pray for me, I know she will. When I go, I'm lost and confused, and I feel like everything is just going through my hands, she will sit down with me. And I know when I make her upset, she doesn't come back and yell at me, but she's quiet and asks questions. Her focus is not on the size of our house or what I do for a living for money, but what am I doing with other people? And that is the character of what God is looking for, both in men and women. It's not what we make with our money, but what we do with that money that is made. You can be rich, yet financially be poor because you use that little bit of money well. And the money is not your own, but it is the Lord's, and you live such a way. Taking care of your body is not one so I can have people go, man, you look good, but so that I can have the energy to do the things that God has called me to do. I don't want to get so caught up in these meaningless, frivolous little things that America loves to go, this is what marriage is supposed to look like. This big house with a cool fence, that you have another house in Florida, that you have the cool car, that you have the truck, and I say that because that's me, because I want the truck so bad. It's not this little dream. But the dream is to go, hey, your house is full of people when there's something wrong. When someone is broken, that you will be like, hey, I got food and I got a place to sit. Let's sit and talk. To live open-handedly. And not in conflict with one another. The attributes that it first describes for the woman, and it uses this gentle and quiet spirit, because one of the problems that they're having is they're butting heads all the time. She's going, I am the one who's right. I am dominating you. Which is wrong. Because then we get to the flip side. It says, likewise, husbands, likewise, live with your wives in an understanding way. And that doesn't mean that's not an attempt to be demeaning to women, but it's to be men. Don't push your wife over. Don't dismiss her. Sit down and listen, which is very hard to do. Maybe not for all you guys. I'll say that for me as a man. It's hard for me to listen. Christina had that issue yesterday where she had to go, is this a time for you to listen or not? And I had to honestly say, it's not, but I will focus. And I had to confess that to her, that sin, because my mind was elsewhere. But it says, likewise, you be understanding. Show honor to her. Lift her up. You should not be bringing your wife down, whether it be with your actions or your words. And again, a lot of times, I can say, any man can say, I love you. But if the actions is always cutting, you are a liar, and that is wrong. That is sin. That goes against God's own desires. And that's why he even says, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel. And again, the word weaker there, people get upset about this. It literally just means the physicality. It has nothing to do with mentality or whatever people want to say. It literally says, naturally, a man is stronger than a natural woman. If Christine and I arm wrestle, I hope I beat her. I say hope because there's a chance. But I know if we go on the bench press, I can beat her. I know that much. But if arm wrestling, she might win. But I'm not to dominate her and to say, I'm physically stronger with you, so therefore you have to listen. Because again, you have to remember, this is written to people in Rome being physically dominated, mentally broken down, so they can show that they are better than other people. He even says this, because they are heirs with you in the grace of life. And so that also will not hinder your prayers. One thing I want to understand, because we don't talk about this, I don't think enough, and it could just be me. God is open to forgiveness for those who seek it. But if you want to walk in sin, don't expect God to listen to you. If you go, I can do what I want and the Lord will still hear me, you're missing something. This is why the Lord goes, if you want to dominate your wife and say that you're better than her, wives, if you want to say, I'm better than my husband, forget him, do not expect for the Lord to honor what you pray. Which is a terrifying thing, and I think even more terrifying, because in American culture we go, man, come as you are, and God will hear you, and everything's okay. The reality is, in the sense of that, it's saying, come as you are, confessing your sin and your need. Because we're not perfect. And though God says, man, the creation is good, we have turned it wrongly and misused and abused the gifts that God has given us of work and of marriage and of singleness and time. This is a terrifying section for me as a husband and as someone who talks to people about marriage quite often, saying, if you don't respect your wife well, the Lord will not honor you. If you don't respect your husband well, the Lord will not honor you. But I also want to say this. This doesn't happen, it just doesn't magically fix itself in marriage. This begins long before. Characteristics begin at a child. So parents, you have a responsibility to teach your children good characteristics. Junior high school, college students, young adults, we have a responsibility, everyone has a responsibility to grow in those characteristics, to live in a way that is honoring to God, because people go, man, I know one day, I've heard this, and it just irritates the crud out of me when people go, I want to date them because they're really cool and they're hot. I know they're not that great of a person. I can fix that. No, you can't. If they do not submit to the Lord, that character that we see as wicked is going to continue growing in wickedness. But the character that we see in faithfulness will continue to go in faithfulness. So look at the character of who you would desire to marry. Develop your character with your friends and family. When college students introduce me to significant others, and we get to know them a little bit more, I like to watch them not treat the person they're dating. I want to watch them treat their friends. Because how they treat their friends is how one day they'll treat them. And if they treat their friends terribly, I'm going to tell them, go away from that person. That is not who you need dating. That is not who you need to look to possibly have that future with. So have character before marriage, because marriage doesn't make things change and get better for the most part. It amplifies whatever is wrong. It also amplifies whatever is good. If you would, turn to Ephesians chapter 5. And one of the most important things about marriage is that marriage is a picture, which made me cry earlier, so I'm going to try not to do that again because that's embarrassing. Because I'm up here in front of you guys. I don't want you to see you cry. I'm an ugly crier. But Ephesians chapter 5, verses 22 through 33, it really puts marriage into perspective. And I'll say for me, it makes me think a little bit more before I respond to certain instances in our marriage. It says this. It says, wives, submit to your own husbands. And again, submission is just a willful choice. I'm willingly choosing to listen to you, to obey, as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, his body, and is himself its Savior. Now the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit everything to their husbands. Pretty straightforward, right? We sit, we listen, and again, submission, I think about this a lot with a boss, right? One of my roles is to submit to Jay. And there are times where Jay and I will butt heads. I don't think it's that often, but there are some times where I go, I disagree, but I will submit to you because you're my boss, and I believe this is where the Lord has placed you. And that is my submission, not, and again, it's not only to him as my boss, but it's to the Lord himself. And I've done that throughout different jobs in my life. I think the job picture puts it a little bit more realistic than the husband and wife thing because it's just so tense. And so I hope that kind of puts a better picture. And honestly, I think I find this as the easier part of this piece of scripture. And again, I know that might be a little sketchy to some of you, but I think the easier part is for, hey, ladies, submit to your husbands. Now, husbands, here comes the fun part for us, and I think this is actually more difficult. It says, husbands, love your wives as Christ has loved the church, and he gave himself up for her, that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, so that he might present the church to himself in splendor, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she might be holy and without blemish. In the same way, husbands should love their wives as their own body. He who loves his wife loves himself, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes it and cherishes it, just as Christ does the church, because we are members of his body. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This mystery is profound, and I'm saying that as it refers to Christ and the church. However, let each one of you love his wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. So these two things play off one another. Again, Peter even said, wives, submit to your husbands, even if they're not great. But the expectation, and then he goes on to say, hey, husbands, be good men. But the expectation here from Paul is, husbands, you live a life that's worth following. Your life, husbands, my life, is not to make my life better for myself. It is, I'm to lay down my life for the needs of my wife before my own. And as a father puts the needs of his children before his own. Because that is the picture and the portrayal that Jesus did on the cross. I always think that the night before Jesus dies, he's sitting in the garden. The thing that he says is, Lord, Lord, if there's any other way for this to happen, please take it from me. I don't want to do this, but I will submit. And he put the needs of the church and the creation above his own. Jesus, knowing what the pain and the torment that he's about to experience. And he goes, I don't want to do it, but the Lord has called me to do it, and I will do so. I will put others' needs above my own. And so as men, we are to lead in that way. We are to lead in such a way that exemplifies Christ's love to the church. It's supposed to be weighty. There's supposed to be this moment of fear going, I don't think I can do it. And the great thing is that you can't. But the better thing is that as believers is Jesus Christ, the Holy Spirit that lives within us that can. It is not I who is great, but it is the Spirit that lives within me that can lead me on into these things through humbling of myself into walking down that hard path. We're going, hey, I know this is what I want to do, but I know this is something that our family needs to do, and this is better than what I want. So let's go that way. And that is sometimes a hard call. So this is why when we say, hey, and I remember, because even Christina got so upset when so many people told us, always say yes, dear. Our responsibility of believers is not to just say yes to everything. That's part of the reason why the American church is in the shape that it's in. We've just started saying yes to everything. But I say, yes, dear, I know you want that, but that is not what is going to push us on to faithfulness, but more selfishness. So let's go this way. Well, that's hard. I know. I don't want to do it either. Let's go do it together. And there's plenty of times Christine has talked me off a ledge when I go, we are going to do this. She goes, why would we do this? Explain to me how this is helpful. Again, this is not one to dominate over the other, but as we go back to Genesis chapter 2, is the coming together to meet those needs, to see things that we don't see. There are so often where I go, I don't understand the problem. Here's problem A, solutions right here. We go there. Christina goes, look at all these other little things that you don't see. And people, I've had people go, well, that's not being submissive. Yes, it is, because she's helping me go on spurring to the gospel. She's making me think differently and filling those gaps that could get us in trouble. The last thing I'll say for today is marriage is not the purpose of life. We talked about that earlier, just a little bit. But if you are just going through this life going, man, I want to be rich. I want an amazing spouse. I want the best kids. Those things are not bad. But if that is the only thing you live for, so you can go retire on a house on the beach or in the mountains somewhere, you have missed the point. We have missed the point as a body. Because even that's why in Ephesians he goes, marriage is a picture of a body. It's when people come together. The two shall become one flesh, and as the church is one flesh, each has a different role, purpose, gift, and usefulness, but they're meant to be working together. The marriage is a picture. It is not the ultimate means of life. But it's to show what Jesus has done through our everyday action with one another. And we live that out, both or in every instance of singleness, of marriage, of friendships. We can walk these paths. So I'm not here to tell you, don't waste your marriage or don't waste your singleness or don't waste your friendships. I'm just telling you, don't waste your life. Don't put things in these little boxes that we go, all right, I've moved from A to B and then C will come up. This is not a job where we just go, all right, I'm going to start here and in 4 months I'm going to be here and in 5 years I'm going to be here and I'm going to make this much money. But every day goes, how do we follow God more faithful? How do we show others the realness and the forgiveness? Understand, the forgiveness, I think, is probably the biggest aspect of the gospel, the forgiveness and reconciliation and the bringing back to oneness, to understanding. And I think about that so much in marriage where there's so much tension over sometimes just small things, but that tension can become so big if we don't handle it, like sin. If you don't handle it when it's small, it just grows and festers and becomes gross and big. Marriage is not our end goal, but our end goal is to live a life fully devoted to Jesus Christ. And without that, who cares if you have a good marriage? Nobody cares if you have a good friend that if one day you just go look back and go, I was selfish in all this whole time. I never once thought about the Lord or how I can serve the Lord more. How I can show forgiveness and selflessness and how I can uplift others. That is a successful marriage. That is a successful life. So as the band comes out, I want us to think about this as a body of believers going, what are we pushing each other to? Where are we pointing one another? Whether it be single, married, friendships, whatever. What are we pointing to every time we do something? When we get and gather, when we talk, when other people are having marital problems, do we point them to divorce and separation, or do we point, how can we come around them and help them walk in forgiveness and in wisdom and in love? Is my character one that is God-honoring? And if it's not, am I seeking forgiveness and wisdom to better walk in that light? Jesus has forgiven you. He has forgiven me. So why would you not also forgive others? But for you, as if you're a non-Christian, if you don't think this is real, but you're starting to have these questions and you're starting to desire it, this same grace is offered to you. It's a calling out to you where Jesus goes, this is just a picture, but come experience the real thing. Come experience that real forgiveness, that hope that these people talk about. Don't waste our time when we gather, and don't waste this time that is in front of you now. Father, as we just come before you, God, seeking your wisdom and seeking your truth, we just thank you that you have given us a picture of the faithfulness that you have shown us. God, that we get to be a part of something that is greater than ourselves. God, but may these words just not be words, but actions. That we follow through and walk in forgiveness and joy and selflessness. That we put others' interests above our own. That we put your interests above our own. God, just thank you that for that forgiveness has been brought into our lives. We ask these things in the name of Jesus.